Now let's try another lucky phone call.
Winter is coming.
Let's try one more number.
You are a true friend of the crown.
Oh, I'm sorry. The phrase is KBBL is going to give me something stupid.
Pretty weird.
That's disappointing. I wanted those elephants.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 246 for the week of April 15th, 2019. I am goat and sheep-based diet David T. Cole, and I'm here with Dragon Ride Sarah D. Bunting.
That's what she saith.
Tree Face Tara Ariano.
It's pronounced Treeface.
The Red Woman Kim Reed.
For the night is dark and full of terrors.
And Winterfell's saddest haberdasher, Jim Durr.
Why won't anyone wear a goddamn hat?
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Extra Hot Great. Game of Thrones final season is upon us. We watched the finale on Sunday. Here to talk about it, live from Syracuse, for us, tape for everybody else. It's Kim Reed and Jim Durr. Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Yay!
Kim, you were once upon a time not a Game of Thrones fan, and then you became like a super Game of Thrones fan. And here we are at the last season. Why don't you start us off with what you thought of the premiere, and we'll go from there.
Okay, well, I'm a super duper Game of Thrones fan. I just want to make sure you get that straight. I feel like I might have surpassed my husband in Game of Thrones fannery, just in that I'm more intense about it. In an embarrassing kind of way. But anyway, this episode, this season, I'm super psyched for it. There was a lot of stuff that kind of had to happen in this episode, and I'm glad they got it all out of the way. I wasn't sure, given that there's only six episodes in this last season, how much they were going to draw it out. And they really didn't. They said, okay, everybody's in the place where they need to be. We had all our major reunions and people got to see each other who haven't seen each other in many seasons, in some cases since the first season. And John found out who his parents really are. And okay, now we get to see the fallout of all of that, plus the wars to come. So Jim, I don't know. Jim and I really haven't talked too much about it other than while we watched it and sort of immediately after, but we haven't really processed it. I was saving it for the podcast. So Jim, what did you think?
Thank you.
Yeah. We haven't been speaking for days, so I hope you appreciate it.
It's been very awkward for your children.
They don't even notice. No, I thought it was good. I like when things end, so I'm excited about, like, the finish line.
I like
being...
when things end?
Well, because
I know what he means.
Everything else is stage setting, yeah. and now we know where they're going to get to, versus, yeah. like, Lost, you know, yeah. if you look at Lost, or even Game of Thrones, you know, season 5 was hot garbage.
Yeah.
And if it had ended then, no one would miss it.
Yeah.
So it's nice that they finally, you know, they got a little uphill climb and now hopefully they go out on a high note.
Yeah. Especially since, you know, originally when they started the show, they had the books mm-hmm. to go off of.
Yeah.
And then they outpaced the books, which they never expected to do because they thought, you know, George R. R. Martin would write a book once every decade or so. And so, you know, the show creators, I think, have been freelancing it since what, season 5?
5, I think, was where it yeah. all fell off the rails.
Yes. And so, you know, I think that's part of why season 5 was not necessarily the best season, because they were sort of scrambling like, oh, crap, we got to figure out how we're going to get, we know where we want to go. I think they always knew where they wanted to go, but they just had to figure out how they were going to get there and how long it was going to take and if HBO would pay for it. So, yeah, no, I see what you mean, but I was teasing about.
So it's sort of a table setting and table clearing at the same time.
Yeah, they definitely, you know, I thought it was funny, not funny to think about, you know, the genocide of hundreds of possibly thousands of people. But in the season 6 finale, when Cersei blew up the Sept and, you know, lots of people died. It was kind of funny from a meta standpoint to think, yeah, they just had to get rid of a bunch of characters and like families and storylines so that they could really focus on the main one. And that was sort of a fun way to do it. Just blow them up.
That X'd out a lot of names.
Yeah. So they're still on that path.
Okay. So from the wise and red fans to Tara and Sarah, and I would say somewhere in between all that. Tara, I will say a surprising amount of joy you got from this opening episode.
Yeah, one of the few episodes in this show that I've watched is the series premiere when Bran happens upon a pair of siblings having the sex with each other and gets pushed out a window. And at the end of this episode, he's been back. As many people on Twitter were noting, they don't assume that Winterfell is ADA compliant and that it's probably difficult for him because he uses a wheelchair to get him from place to place. So other than one scene where he's in like a, you know, a big meeting, I'm sure it has a name. He's basically like parked next to, as Dave said, like a patio heater, the Winterfell equivalent of it, and just watching people come and go. And so there were like so many really funny memes of Bran just watching, like sitting creepily and observing people go by. And the best of this, of course, was at the end when Jaime comes back, because one of the few things I actually know about this show is that Jaime thinks this kid is dead and now he's not. And Jaime did not seem very happy to see him. And that was a funny moment that also got memed a lot, that the gif of the recognition and Bran looking super smug. So, yes, thank you to Twitter and to the internet at large for all the Bran memes, because I enjoyed them very much.
Jim and I both, there were two scenes early on before the one Tara was talking about at the end, where they kind of just at the end of the scene just cut to Bran staring at them.
Yeah.
And Jim and I both burst out laughing every time it happened. And I said, you know, I kind of wish every scene at Winterfell, that's how that was the button on the scene. Like somebody has this conversation and then cut to Bran just staring at them creepily, because it made me laugh every single time.
I wanted it to actually be
20.
Yeah, I wanted it to be actually every scene. So like Cersei would take a sip of wine and look through the doorway. And there's Bran in a solarium staring creepily back.
I mean, he is the three-eyed raven. He's
everywhere.
Project himself or something. Who knows? Who knows what his powers are? It's a mystery.
Like, to sit still and stare creepily into the middle distance.
Sarah, you're another one we have to watch, watcher of Game of Thrones. What did you think of this episode? Were you confused? Did you?
Enron? Sauron? Euron? Looks like Pacey. It's distracting. Yeah.
I was just going to say, the one that looks like Josh Jackson?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Glad it wasn't just me. I love Lady Mormont. She's the best. I would just watch a whole show about her, like after the Bran staring creepily. Just cut to her being like, so can we get on with it? Because that's, you know, my favorite function of hers. I was glad to see Bronn. I was annoyed that, like, it's a scene with sex workers and we don't see his little sex worker, just some naked ladies, because hashtag Game of Thrones. But yeah, I mean, it was fine. I am told that I would like this show if I started at the beginning by people who usually know what they're talking about, but I just don't think that's the case.
No, Sarah, you wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
I'd say that as someone who was a convert, I don't see it happening for you.
Yeah, it's too bad, because it really is like, you know, do you see all these think pieces about whatever, like what's the next great like monoculture property on TV? And I'm like, but is this really that monolithic? I feel like there are a lot of people who don't watch this, or, you know, couldn't get into it, or
I think there's, when people talk about that, I think you can talk about four quadrant shows that are that big and genre shows that are that big, because four quadrant shows are going to be the bigger draw, but your genres are going to be the buzzier one. Like Game of Thrones, you know, pulls really good numbers, but, you know, it doesn't pull as good numbers as All in the Family back in the day, you know, like.
Right. Right. But it was as big as The Walking Dead in its prime, although that is starting to fall off now. And also because Walking Dead, like, it feels like it's on more. Game of Thrones seasons are short and they're far apart. So it makes it feel like more of an event when it is on, I think.
Sure. I thought this episode was a little funnier than most, although it just might be the fact that we haven't watched an episode in a year and a half. Jim, Kim, did you find that there was more jokes and sort of levity in this episode than others? Because we had the elephant stuff with Cersei, which is kind of funny. We had the I am disappoint dragon stuff when...
I don't think he was disappoint. I think he was horned.
Oh, really? You think? Oh, I see. He wants to get in on it? Okay.
Yeah.
Different interpretations of that look.
I have two things about that. One is that when I'm watching an episode for the first time at this point, I'm so anxious about what's going to happen and who's, you know, but who's going to die and what's going to happen and all of that, that I can't really appreciate the humor, I don't think. And so I, you know, while the things you said, I did think were funny. Overall, anxiety was really my total, like, what's going to happen? Are Sansa and Danny going to get along? What's going to happen when John finds out? Right. Oh, Sam's, you know, like, I'm just so anxious about the whole thing and how it's going to all turn out.
So you're like sick in bed. Yeah. you got all these issues. Patch Adams runs into the room and you're yes. I can't.
Yes.
Next week.
And then the other thing is, I think there's a lot of humor in a lot of episodes. Also, like, I don't know that this one was unusually funny to me. I think there's generally, you know, Tyrion's always got his one-liners, although right. those are really falling flat lately. So I don't, yeah. I'm worried about Tyrion, what that says. Yeah, I don't know. Jim had to step out, so he doesn't get to weigh in on this topic.
Okay. Well, I have a couple of borrowed observations that people were making on Twitter, and so I'll throw it to you, Kim, as our expert. It also seemed to me, like, judging on Twitter, that you were doing a rewatch in advance of the premiere, or, like, were rewatching particular episodes. Is that the case?
Yeah.
So someone, and I believe it was past guest of the show, James Poniewozik on Twitter, was saying that the tension on the show, or the lesson it seems to be trying to teach, is that it's not possible to be a good leader and a good person. Do you feel, A, that's true, and B, that this is what John is going to have to learn between now and the finale?
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I was thinking about how Danny, they've been giving us hints for the past, like, two seasons that she, you know, prior to that, it was all Daenerys is the one true leader and she's mm-hmm. the one to save the world. She's going to break the wheel. But lately it's like, for somebody who wants to break the wheel, she sure does seem to love the pomp and circumstance and people bending the knee to her. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody who wants to break the wheel doesn't need people to bend the knee, in my opinion. Yeah. And then John is sort of the flip side of that, where he's like, he's a reluctant leader. He doesn't really want to do it, but people sort of naturally follow him. And, you know, he was brought back from the dead, but he has a hard time making the tough decisions that I think a leader has to make at times. So, yeah, I don't know. The answer might be no leader. You know, they might. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. That's what I'm interested to find out. But I agree right. that the show definitely seems to be trying to say that it is hard to be a good person and a good leader, or to be an honorable person and a good leader. Jim, what do you think? Jim's back.
Hi.
No.
I mean, I think John, like, yeah, obviously Daenerys is they're pushing her toward a, like, or at least they're dropping in hints about, like, is she really, did the apple fall that far from the tree?
Yeah.
With the, you know, setting people on fire and stuff.
As
you know, I mean, if you've got dragons, it's
easy,
like,
as well. Yeah. You know, yeah. Easier than beheading. Yeah. Much
shit's
going
to happen.
Yeah.
Like it or not.
When you've got a hammer, every body looks like a flaming pillar. it's something like that. It's an old saying. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Translating on the fly from Old English.
Sure.
But with John, like, John hasn't had some of those opportunities either. Like, he's you know, he hasn't been given the opportunity to become.
Well, he was fast tracked, right?
He was also dead for a while.
He led the Night's Watch
resume.
Every time something bad happens to him or he fucks up, he seems to get promoted. Yeah. Like, didn't he become King of the North after he died the first time?
Yeah. Yes. Then, he is, like, Peter Principled his way up the ladder. Yes.
He comes back and gives up the crown, or, you know, gives up leadership to Dragon Lady. And now he's true King of the North as he finds out he's the, you know, the rightful heir. So I feel like Jon Snow, he's just going to do whatever. And, like, soon he'll just be, you know, he'll be supreme leader of the planet. And that's that. And just because, you know, that's his fate, he just fails upwards.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. I mean, the last time he was a leader before he was King in the North, when he was the head of the Night's Watch, you know, he got killed by his own men. So I don't know that he necessarily is the best leader or the person to promote, but it's also possible that the show wants to set him up as the prince who was promised. And that he's been, you know, fated to be the person who's going to lead the people out of the long winter or whatever. I don't know if I got all that terminology correct, but.
Right. But if people are fated, then what is the point of the game?
Yeah.
Of Thrones, you know, like, it feels like part of this should be about strategy. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But not everybody believes in, you know, they have different religions. And so not the people who believe in the Lord of Light, like Melisandre. and Thoros of Myr and Beric Dondarrion. That's the flaming sword guy and the guy with the top knot that died last season. For non-watchers, they believe that there is a prince who was promised. There's like this legend, right? That there was a prince. There's a prince who was promised, or princess, as we found out last season, depending on the translation, who's going to lead the people out of the long winter. The people in the south believe in the seven, right? I'm looking at Jim. Like, am I getting this right? believe in the seven. Different religion, and they don't have that. And that's like the Lannisters and the Tyrells and those people. They don't have that same legend and that same mythology and believe that, you know, the Lord of Light is going to, you know, kill them or whatever. And then the people in the north have a completely different religion that I don't know what it's called. They have the trees with the faces.
Sure.
And they believe in the old gods. So anyway, sort of, that sort of answers your question, maybe.
Okay.
Depends on what religion you believe in, I guess.
I mean, my main question is, how come I've seen Lady Mormont in two scenes in my life and she owned both of them? Why isn't she more in the conversation?
Yeah, I got to tell you, there is a YouTube video that is a collection of Lady Mormont that is, you know, her two big scenes. And if you ever need to get pumped up for something like some sort of competition or just like job interview or something, you should go watch it, because I watch it and I just want to like punch through a door or something.
I love her.
Oh, I love her so much. If she dies, I'm going to be so upset.
Yeah.
How about a couple rapid fire questions for Kim and Jim or predictions, perhaps? And I won't go to like who's going to take it all. Is Arya going to hook up with
Gendry?
Yeah.
My man, Gendry?
Yeah.
I know he's my like favorite. I don't know. Maybe. I didn't think so until this episode. And then there definitely was, they were playing that as a flirtation, I thought, as much as Arya can flirt. You know, she's sort of stunted emotionally. So I don't know. But maybe. But yeah, I'm a big Gendry fan. Jim, what do you think?
Yes.
Jim believes in rapid fire.
Predictions on what's going to happen to Jaime now that he's in town?
I think he's going to live long enough to fight the Army of the Dead, because I watched the preview. But I don't know.
I think he'll die heroically.
Yeah, probably. And prove himself, you know, sort of prove that he really came there for the right reasons. Or
sacrifice
whatever.
Himself for Bran or some bullshit.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I could buy that. My final question is for the whole group. How terrible were the John and Danny have a little fly around on their dragon special effects? That was like Superman 1 level blue screen.
How to Train Your Dragon 4 live action. Worst.
Yeah, that scene was they keep trying. Tara, you might have said this on Twitter in the past, maybe. But I don't see any chemistry between those two actors.
No.
And you know, I'd understand they have to, like, that's what the story is that these two fell in love or whatever. But it's just like, I feel like the fewer scenes between the two of them we can get, probably the better. Because
the most convinced I was when whoever were watching them from Liam Cunningham, I don't know the character's name, and whoever else were, and Varys and I guess Tyrion were like watching from really far away, like up on a wall. And you couldn't hear what they were saying, but they were like talking pleasantly. And maybe it was just because it was the actors like talking about what they were going to eat for lunch today, but like not being able to hear them speak, I think really helped convince me that like, okay, they don't hate each other, but yeah, they don't, for me, they don't have romantic chemistry.
Well, the dragon lady never talks normally, right?
That's true.
Everything she says is sort of thought out, and like she's not really an off the cuff dialogued character. So she's always going to be stiff. Like, I don't know if that's the actor's fault, the writing's fault or what, but she just seems like that character is never going to open up in that way that you want to spark chemistry.
The only time I ever remember seeing her seem like a person is when her handmaiden or her assistant or whatever she is, Missandei, hooked up with Grey Worm, the Unsullied leader, and who is a eunuch. And so Danny was like, how does that work exactly? And they sort of had like a hot gossip session about, you know, exactly what went down. And it was funny. And she seemed like a human being. Like, that's what we would all want to know. Right. Like, so you hooked up, but what happened exactly? That was the only time I remember ever seeing her talk like a normal person. So.
Yeah, she wasn't very good in Solo either. So I don't really know if it's like all the show's fault.
Yeah. Also, all that CGI could have been, you know, they could have had ghosts show up for like 30 seconds.
Yeah. Where's Ghost?
We're watching it. Tara says, if you can't do it on screen, don't do it on screen, especially for a show where they're spending so much money everywhere else. It sticks out like such a sore thumb when you really just have this terrible green screen effect. And also, I don't know how Hollywood still has this problem with close up flying stuff looking so fake all the time. Like, somebody really has to like just start a company. It's called Dudes Flying Around Special Effects Company. And that's their specialty. They just make sure the matting and everything just looks right, because it never does. And it always takes you out of it. And it's always in something that like you feel like they're spending enough money that it shouldn't be a problem.
Right. I mean, Sarah said How to Train Your Dragon 4. I mean, they wish. Like, How to Train Your Dragon is much more charming and fun to watch and well animated. And this, it just felt like they could have had the same effect by like we just see them get on the dragons and then take off. And then like, okay, we get it. Like, it's not like there was anything happening in that except us seeing that like Jon Snow doesn't know how to ride a dragon and then he gets better. Like, I could have probably filled that in with my own imagination. Like, cut that shot and give me more views of Danny's coat, because it was fire.
Yeah. Yeah, all of the women are really bringing it this season. Like, Danny's, Sansa had that. Jim's like, why is she wearing a choke collar? Which it was. But it looks, it really gives the impression of like she is, you know, feeling her power, or, you know, that she's very confident. And Cersei's just keeps adding more metal to her outfits, which I find amazing. Like, pretty soon she's going to be in a full suit of armor, but it's going to somehow look like fashion. And I'm here for it. I love it.
I wish she had gone back to the long hair, because the Fräulein Maria look doesn't do it.
Oh, awful.
The Fug Girls, Jessica, was tweeting about that too, about how bad the wig is. And I read somewhere that Lena Headey calls it the turnip. Her wig.
That's pretty good.
She also hated it, which I'm like, so why didn't you say something? You know, because it's bad. Yeah.
Before we move on, any closing thoughts? Anything we didn't cover that you really just have to get off your chest, opening it to everybody?
I have one more thing, which is I want to root for Sansa. On paper, if you handed me a piece of paper and wrote down everything that Sansa has been through over the many seasons and what her current position is, and then said, and then Danny and John come to town, and how do you think she should react? I would answer exactly how she did react. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's the actor or what, but something, I turned to Jim. I'm like, why does Sansa have such a bad attitude? Like, she just, and she's 100% right. And it was the same last season when they had the Battle of the Bastards? Or was that two seasons ago when they had the Battle of the Bastards? And Jim's giving me hand signals. And she was upset with John because they weren't listening to her in terms of figuring out their strategy for this battle, because they were fighting against the guy that she had been quote unquote married to. Basically, she was forced into marriage.
Right.
And she threw this kind of tantrum, and she was 100% right. But I was just so annoyed with her. And so I want to really like Sansa, and I want to root for her, because on paper, everything she says is true. And she's been through a lot, like many of the characters have. But I just was kind of wanted someone to just, I want someone to be there to say, Sansa, just calm down a little bit. Like, you know, I understand that you don't have the food stores, but also I'm also the brand in the situation where I'd be like, we don't have time for this.
Yeah.
There's dead people who are walking down from the north and they're going to kill us all. So maybe let's worry about the food situation after we see who's still alive, because we might not have that many people to feed, if anyone. So let's not worry about it. But
yeah, I did enjoy the conversation between John and Sansa John and Danny, where she says, your sister doesn't like me. And he pauses for like 10 minutes and then says, she doesn't know you, which like we all see through that one. But nice try, idiot. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
It was nice to see Yara again.
It was nice to see Yara again. Cool. I'm kind of done with the Greyjoys. I don't need to.
Okay.
How about you? Do you want to know more about what happens with Theon and Yara?
Not particularly.
And Euron?
Yeah. Well, certainly not Euron.
Yeah.
I like Yara.
Yes, I like Yara as well.
Like NCIS, they do everything navally.
I mean, it is kind of tough. Once you get inland, they're not that helpful.
No.
There's always a fjord or something.
Yeah. Knight Rider, except for the opposite.
It's Nightboat. There's always a fjord. Yeah.
I thought the scene between Sam and Danny was actually surprisingly moving, where she has to tell him what happened with his family, because he, you know, obviously no one was texting him. He had no idea what happened. And And yeah, getting the news of the family lands that he thought he was going to return to being gone, and why, I thought was surprisingly well done, considering, as we've said many times, I don't have a lot of history with these characters. I was surprised how much that scene affected me.
I like how that turned when, like, well, I set your dad on fire, and he's like, well, that's too bad, but
yeah, it was a dick.
He was kind of a dick. He was. So, mm-hmm. And then, oh, and also your brother, and then he loses it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was rough. Yeah. But again, she had a great coat, so I can't be
who among us.
Time to go around the dial. First up, Tara Ariano.
I watched a new show that had premiered by the time you hear this last night on ABC called Bless This Mess. This is the story of Lake Bell as Rio. Her name is Rio. It took me until halfway through the screener to realize
she dance across the sand.
She wishes. She moves to Nebraska to try and start an alfalfa farm with her awful husband, Dax Shepard.
Those are terrible lyrics.
Yeah, it really took me until halfway through the screener to realize that's what everyone was calling her, because I kept wanting it to be like Rena or something, but it wasn't. It's Rio. So she actually, Lake Bell, co-created and wrote and directed the pilot and co-created the show with Elizabeth Merriweather, from who also did New Girl. So as Kim said, on paper, there's a lot to like here. Also in the supporting cast are Lennon Parham and David Koechner as this couple's neighbor. So what happens? They live in New York, although when they shoot it, it's clearly L.A. She's a shrink. He's a journalist. He inherits his aunt's farm in Nebraska, and they decide to just leave their life and go and make a go of this, even though they do not know anything about farming. And he hasn't been to this place since he was a kid. So, of course, they get there. It's a shithole. Also, her mother is played by Susie Essman and keeps calling her to like try and talk her out of all of this because she has no experience in any of this, and also is scared of cows, which, yes, of course, that means there is a cow confrontation in the pilot. But the supporting cast is so much better than either of the leads. And I like Lake Bell, but they're set up to be such idiots that it's impossible to root for them, starting from the premise, which is like, you can't just, as Lennon Parham says, like, we've been doing this all our lives. You can't just decide to be a farmer. Like, there's something so condescending about the premise of it. And even though obviously the point of this is going to be to like humble them and make them realize everything they don't know about what they thought they were doing, it's still so stupid. And of course, when the neighbors like pop by, there has to be a whole moment where like all the food they have is city food. Like, we have biscotti and we have kale chips and we have kombucha. No. Like, we get it. They're from the city. Calm down. But yeah, it's, the thing about it is that they put up one screener, and I feel like if either they put up one screener or all the screeners, like, you know, they do not believe in this. Like, if they put up three or four, like, okay, they're going to give it a go. But this feels like such a burn off, like premiering a sitcom on April 16th. Come on. Ooh. Now. I know that it's year round TV, but seriously. So, yeah, there are a few funny moments that make me want to keep watching in case they like sort of settle out, because as I said, the supporting cast is really good. Ed Begley Jr. is also in it as like this guy that the late aunt was letting live in her barn, and he has a history with the owner of the hardware store / sheriff, who is played by Pam Grier. Like, they're all great. Susie Essman on the phone, hilarious, calling to like remind Lake Bell of the story of when they went to a petting zoo one time and she was so freaked out by a cow that it ran away and got run over on the freeway. It's more funny when she tells it. It's yeah, kind of a mixed bag, but yeah, not something I can wholeheartedly recommend. Although because of the Liz Merriweather imprimatur, I will probably watch a couple more, but yeah, no, back to bird. Not good. For my plug, I wrote last week about Jane the Virgin. The show had a pay parody storyline that weirdly paralleled some difficulties that Gina Rodriguez, the star of the show, has had in discussing this matter in public. And I sort of laid that out. So we'll link it in the show notes. But that was at Decider. That's it.
Kim Reed.
OK, I have three quick things. Number one is I am watching this season of Survivor, which is my other show that I'm weirdly crazy about other than Game of Thrones. And there was a crazy tribal council last week, which I appreciated. So I still love the show. And I also want to say, if people who don't watch every season or whatever, there's some interesting rumors about out there about season 40 that I won't say here because I don't want to spoil anyone. But if you Google season 40 rumors Survivor, I'm sure you will find out.
Oh, I thought that was confirmed.
No, it hasn't been confirmed. It's just a rumor.
Oh, okay. Well, you can say what it is.
The rumor is that it's going to be an all-winner season, which is something that fans have been clamoring for. A lot of the winners have said, I won't ever play again unless it's an all-winner season, because it's such a disadvantage to them to come back with, you know, other returnees who haven't won. They're targeted so early.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's exciting. It's currently airing season 38. So this would be the season that would air next January, if true. The other thing is, number two was tonight. If you're listening to this the day it drops, tonight is the season premiere return of The Amazing Race. It got pushed up because Million Dollar Mile or whatever that show was failed horribly.
Yeah, sorry, LeBron.
Got moved to Saturdays and then I think right off the schedule. So they pushed Amazing Race up. This season was filmed a while ago. It's all returning reality stars from Amazing Race, Survivor, and Big Brother. And I know that TAR purists, if they are still out there, will probably aren't interested in this season as much. But I think that it's not a bad idea to put people on the show that you know are interesting and make good TV.
Yeah.
As well as people that you're already sort of familiar with. If you watch at least one of those shows, you'll know some of the teams. Because, you know, then you don't have to have that first three episodes where you can't tell anybody apart. And one of the returning teams, old school TWAP MBTV viewer fans may remember Colin, whose ox was broken.
God, he's alive.
Yes, Colin and Christy are one of the returning teams. So I just thought I'd mention that for those old school fans. And then finally, I was going to just talk about The Magicians, which I've talked about on this podcast before, as other people have too, and always recommend it. The season 4 finale is also airing Wednesday night. But I don't really have much to say about season 4. It's been a little hit or miss for me. But regardless, there's been some really good episodes. It's definitely worth, eventually it'll end up on some streaming service this season and you can binge watch it. And I think it'll probably be a better season to watch binge wise than it was week to week. It hits that sort of Buffy whole zone for me, where it's sort of like an ensemble cast that I like some of them more than others, but when they all team up, it gives me, you know, fun feelings, but they also have really hard, you know, problems. And I don't know, it definitely hits that Buffy zone for me. So if you miss Buffy, this might be a show that you might want to check out. I know the first three seasons are definitely available on multiple streaming services, and season 4 finale airs tonight, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, on Sci-Fi.
If your Buffy hole remains for more than 4 hours, consult
your doctor. Notice I changed it to zone after I started to say hole, and then I was like, oh, that's not a good one to say.
No.
Tried to quickly change to zone. Thanks, Dave.
No problem, Kim. Anything to plug there?
I'm still working on reviving my Little House on the Podcast since previously .tv ended. Now it's all on me. And guys, Dave does a lot of work. I don't know if you know this. So he used to do all the back end stuff and I just had to say stupid words into a microphone. So now I have to do all of it myself. And I'm glad to, but it just takes a little more time and it's taking me a little longer to get back up and running. But if you follow at LHOT Podcast on Twitter or Facebook, you certainly will be the first to know when I finally get things back up and running.
Very good. All right, Sarah, your turn. What do you got?
Bosch. Bosch is returning this coming Friday. I got screeners. I got sucked back into the show. The show is really it's not a great show, but it's such an appealingly good show. Season 5 is, you know, it's not a departure. It's the same. You know, there's a noirish, far-reaching conspiracy and ends up going undercover and someone's reopening one of his old cases, blah, blah, blah. There's also some suspect dialogue, an adult child and her parent don't have conversations in which the phrase "there's two kinds of truth" is uttered by anyone. That's not a thing. that happens. Also, this adult child is the child of a police officer and should not be blinking like a sheep when testifying is explained to her. Like, everybody knows what that is. Don't you listen to any true crime podcasts? Anyway, there are some little problems like that. However, if episode 4's casting is not an effort to get one John E. Ramos to watch this show, I don't know what. You've got Richard Code from Felicity. You've got Ponyboy from Southland. You've got Drusilla from Buffy. And as a special extra for Buncee, you've got Robinette from Law and Order. Like, it's a lot. Like, everyone passes through the show eventually. Also, Amy Aquino from Felicity is still on it. So, John, if you're not watching the show, check it out. Season 5 drops on Amazon. It's not going to, like, change your world, but it's enjoyable. Plus, John would get to do location spotting that I cannot do because I do not live in Los Angeles. And I know I recommend Bosch all the time on this podcast, so everybody that I've converted, heads up, incoming. For my plug, I actually forgot to put anything in the in our rundown doc to plug, but since Tara mentioned Rio, March Madness did conclude. Our Patreon supporters picked Rio for us to analyze, so we did that this week. And this week we have two hits by Lizzo that we're talking about. So that's Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Check it out.
Jim.
Jeopardy is a television program and potentially the only one I actually watch live and in a timely fashion. Everything else, I just wait to show up on Netflix or never watch it at all because I just can't be bothered. And there's a dude on there right now, James Holzhauer, who's killing it. He's earning like $60,000 on average a night. And he's like second only to Ken Jennings in earnings or something at this point. It's always exciting to watch somebody sort of go on a run. I was actually considering like if it would even be possible to go back and rewatch some of Ken Jennings, whatever, 74 game streak from several years ago. And
my dad is obsessed with this guy.
Yeah.
Because my dad is one of those daily double purists.
Oh.
Who is like disgusted when people don't bet all of it to double it. But this guy does that. And my dad's like, ha, my people.
And you know, it's working out for him. So your dad's onto something.
Yeah. I was like, well, it looks good when it works, Pop, doesn't it? But yeah.
Yeah. You know, obviously Alex may not have long for hosting. So sort of nice that he gets to be a part of this as well. And for my plug, I have nothing.
Cool.
If you need something rebooted, I'm your guy.
Have you tried turning it off and on again?
Yeah, pretty much, yes.
I don't have an actual show to talk about, so I'm just going to squeeze in two things. One, for all those, and we thank you all that have submitted game times and cannons recently, just because none of them have been submitted and cashed in recently, you may have noticed our extra credit topic has not been around for the last few weeks. That's because we're still waiting for people to cash them in. So if you have one in the bank, please do cash it so we can get back to that. And second of all, I just want to mention a Patreon update. Thank you very much to everybody who has been supporting us through that. We are now three bonus episodes a month because of your contributions. And I just want to give you a little taste of one of the episodes. This is last week's episode where we're talking about when the wrong spinoff is made from a show and then how we would write that course. Here's a couple of minutes from one of my submissions. We're talking about Caprica, which is the spinoff from Battlestar Galactica. And that's where this clip begins. So my idea for a spinoff is let's double down on Slow and Boring, shall we, with a prequel to the prequel. Can a Battlestar Galactica show set planet side without space battles and without robots succeed? Let's find out. I think it can with Battlestar Galactica, the Corner Cutter. So Battlestar Galactica, the Corner Cutter is a blue collar story about Mac. And Mac is a factory worker responsible for cutting the corners off all printed material in the Battlestar Galactica universe. Now, if you're not familiar with Battlestar Galactica, it does this thing that a lot of sci-fi shows on TV and movies do, which is, I'm sure there's a trope name for it, but I will call it the tradition of the easy thing. And the easy thing is something that's slightly different from our world to tell you that this is a different place.
Oh, all the jackets have weird epaulets.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Unitards. It's yep. the future.
The silver glitter uniform. Blue skin. Other things you can do for under $20.
Octagons.
On Battlestar Galactica is turning square paper into oblong octagons. And they basically cut off the little corners of every page on a 45 degree angle at the top, like as much as you would dog ear a page. That's always cut off any paper on the human side of the show.
It's really dumb.
That is very weird.
It really, yeah. So the question is, why does colonial society in the show universe not question why this is happening? Why do they need to take square books and reams of paper and cut off all the corners? Okay, so we're back. That's the end of the clip. It goes on for another 4 minutes or so. Where I go into how this concept of cutting corners off paper leads to this whole spinoff where there's all these conspiracies and stuff. It was a real off-the-cuff deep dive into the way my mind works. These are a lot of fun to do. They're kind of like looser and goofier than some of the topics we cover here because they're, you know, more like the minis of yore. If you're interested, the link is patreon.com/extrahotgrate, or the link is up top on extrahotgrate.com, and you can follow through from there. Thank you once again to all our supporters. Really Thank do you. Appreciate it. That means it is time for the canon. This week, we have a submission from Charles S. Take it away, Charles.
Way back in Extra Hot Great 102, the later season pseudo-bottle episode The Subway became Homicide: Life on the Street's first official canon induction. Though the panel seemed to long for an opportunity to review a more representative episode, so I'm here today with an episode that features a whole lot of Andre Brower, Kyle Secor, and Yaphet Kotto, and exactly zero Vincent D'Onofrio. Season 2, Episode 2, titled Black and Blue. In the A-plot of this episode, Brower's Detective Frank Pembleton is the primary on a police-involved shooting that occurred in the previous episode. It was not at all unusual for early season Homicide to extend stories across episodes, and it's not necessary to have seen that episode to jump in here. A young black man, Charles Cortland Cox, or CC, was shot in the back and killed in the chaos following a poorly executed police raid. In the opener, Pembleton interviews three of the officers on the scene, the delightfully named Officer Fred Hellriegel, Hellriegel's partner Jerry Harris, and their CO, Lieutenant Jimmy Tyron. The scene immerses the viewer in the same disorientation Pembleton feels as he tries to establish the basic facts of the case in clip one.
Just tell me what you know, Jerry, that's all. Whatever you know.
All right. All right, maybe I heard one shot.
Yeah?
Or maybe it was a car backfiring.
Lies, lies, lies!
So am I still a suspect? Why would I be carrying a second gun? I don't own a second gun.
The bottom line, you're gonna have to tell the truth to a grand jury, or when the truth does come out, face perjury charges. You understand what I mean?
I was chasing another kid. I was going the other way.
But there were two shots, two bullets. One from Hellriegel's gun and one in Cox's body. Now, maybe you don't hear one shot, but you don't not hear two shots.
You're out of your mind.
Hellriegel says that he didn't even get to the alley until you called him over. How the hell would Hellriegel know?
Okay.
It was a car backfiring.
I don't know.
It was a shot.
I don't know.
Melissa Leo's Kay Howard, along with Pembleton's partner, Secor's Tim Bayless, re-canvass the mostly poor, mostly black neighborhood where the shooting occurred, and they get the business from the residents in clip number two.
Hi. Hello. Yeah. Hi, Detective Howard. I'm with the Homicide Department. I'd like to ask a few questions.
You mean talking about that top boy that got shot?
You have not come to find out about that boy. You have come to cover up your dirt.
There's always drugs. There's always shooting.
But if you could just have a couple of minutes.
I see stuff all the time. Where are you guys when we need you, huh?
Y'all trying to cover up for that guy that you work with. See, we know what happened.
No!
I have no information.
Well, what am I going to tell you, boy, that you don't already know?
Facts.
We'd be happy to hear from you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You want us to catch this guy or what?
Props to Kyle Secor on the first of two subtly great line readings in this episode, with his earnest but resigned response of just facts. In Giardello's office, we learn that none of the service weapons turned in by the officers on the scene matched the bullet that killed Cox, and Pemberton wants to begin administering polygraphs to the officers. After the meeting with Giardello's superior, Colonel Granger, the painful racial dynamics that have been driving tensions between Giardello and Pemberton all along explode from subtext to text, as we hear in our next clip.
Colonel, I interviewed the uniforms we were at the scene, again, but I'm still getting stonewalled. I'd like to have these four officers undergo lie detector tests. Look, G, if this were any other ordinary murder, wouldn't you give faulty witnesses a polygraph? This is not an ordinary murder! There are fellow police officers involved here. They deserve the benefit of the doubt.
I'll allow the tests, but only if the uniforms agree to it voluntarily.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you, Colonel.
Okay, you can both go.
Gee,
get the hell out of my office right
now. Gee, so many times I've tried to...
I said to you before, show me proof that a police officer's guilty, and I'll bring him down myself. But I want proof. I want the truth. Because if you're wrong, you know what that means?
Yes.
And from now on, you come into my office, you talk to me with respect. Talk to me with the same respect you show those white boys
upstairs. I do, Gee. You know that I do.
Every get time out of my office and all at the door, it's your hind parts as you leave.
In a well-regarded scene within Homicide fandom, Howard and Pemberton share a sweet, platonic moment on the roof of police headquarters, where Howard confesses to Pemberton that she and Tyron, the CO on the scene of the shooting, once had an affair. This will pay off a bit later in the episode when we learn that Tyron fails his polygraph and Howard begins to think maybe the affair was not so much about attraction as about Tyron finding excitement in lying to his wife and getting away with it. Hey, just ignore the sound of the 4-ton anvil of foreshadowing crashing down upon you and enjoy Leo and Brower's chemistry here, okay? The gardening woman from the neighborhood canvassing scene returns to name her grandson as a possible witness. The character's name is Lane Staley, an homage to the then mostly alive lead singer of Alice in Chains, and he's played by a little-known Isaiah Washington. Pemberton is certain Staley isn't the shooter, but Giardello challenges Pemberton to pick a side and lights a fuse on a Pemberton-shaped bomb that will blow soon enough. It looks like a classic good cop, bad cop setup at first, with Pemberton laying on the politeness thick, but he quickly turns in clip number 4.
You ain't making a whole lot of stuff out of nothing.
Did you say I'm nothing? You said I'm nothing? I'm nothing? I'm nothing! I'm nothing! I'm nothing! Get out of here. Go ahead. Get out of here.
You mean Frank?
Get out of here. Come on, go! Go! Go!
Props a second time to Kyle Secor for his line reading of, "You mean me, Frank?" As Bayless leaves the room, Pemberton, sweating all over the camera lens and eyes firing lasers, takes over the box, and Brower, intensity turned to 11, takes over the scene. Pemberton blows his stack and repeatedly slams a chair into Staley's table, enraged, it seems, that Staley has disrespected him in front of his partner. In clip 5, we begin to see where Frank is going with this tactic.
Shut up, boy! I'm talking now, and I don't like to repeat myself. I'm the one here who was treating you with respect. Do you know how much goes into that? Do you have any sense of what has taken me to be here with you, for you? To make sure that you have the respect that you deserve. When I first started on the, as a policeman, I had to walk a beat over in the industrial park. And what were my duties? To make sure all the trucks had the correct city stickers and licenses. I was a glorified meter maid. I was a meter maid, Mr. Staley. But I kept at it because in my heart of hearts, I knew that I would become a good cop for the community, for our community.
And don't no cops live on my...
Shut up, boy. I'm talking now. I didn't want there to be that same old, same old. When the white cops took the brothers in the back of a paddy wagon and beat a confession out of them. Huh? We know those days, don't we? We know those stories, don't we? There's a real history of that, isn't there? Huh? Just... get a confession out of one of us. By any means necessary.
Pemberton makes the rhetorical turn to connect Staley's disrespect of him with Staley's denial of his best friend, Cox. Pemberton's careful, repeated use of the phrase, "you put the bullet out there," allows him to implicate Staley, and allows Staley to implicate himself to assuage his guilt for leaving his friend behind on the night he was killed, as we hear in clip 6.
Lane, please help me, Lane, you put the bullet out there. You put the bullet in his path. You left him to die alone.
It never hurts.
You put the bullet out there. You watched him die. might as well have pulled the trigger. You put the bullet out there. You killed him. You killed your friend. You killed him. You shot him, didn't you?
No.
You pulled the trigger. You shot him, didn't you? Didn't you? You pulled the trigger. Go ahead and say it for me. I put the bullet out there.
I put the bullet out there.
I shot him. I killed him.
I shot him. I killed him.
Okay.
All the props to young Isaiah Washington, who is placed in the unenviable position of actually acting his way out of a box opposite Andre Brower, and really holds his own. Pemberton leaves the box as Staley whimpers repeatedly that he's sorry for what he's done, and Pemberton, well aware of what he has done, presents his results to a silent, tortured Giardello. Later, in Staley's holding cell, G rips up the confession and gets the truth in a final clip in which we are reminded that this episode, which aired in 1994, uncomfortably presages more recent events.
And that night was crazy. Everybody's in the room. Running and guns are shining off the streetlights. I duck into the alley and become part of the shadows, man. CeCe had his hands up, but he's still shoving them around. They're both spitting adrenaline, man. They were hotwired. He's got his gun out.
Who?
The cop.
CeCe
knocks the gun out of his hand, man, and starts running. I mean, the juice is really pumping now, man. I can see it in his eyes from where I was. The cop pulls out another gun and shoots CeCe in the back. Oh, he and Yale freeze. Don't move, stop, get down, nothing. Then he turns and sees me.
The name. I want the name.
That name, of course, is Tyron. And in a lockbox in Tyron's home, Pemberton and Bayless find bullets of the same grain as the one pulled from CeCe Cox's back. The episode's closing montage is scored to Ned Beatty's Bolander, performing a section from Handel's Passacaglia with his love interest, Linda the Waitress, played by a young Juliana Margulies. It's unsubtle, but it's kind of gorgeous, as the music overlays scenes of Pemberton and Bayless hauling Tyron through a throng of reporters and past a disgusted Howard. We even hear the phrase in Passacaglia that Bolander says he never gets right, and an off-key cello belch in the middle of the music emphasizes that the show is taking this montage just seriously enough, but not too seriously. I've always admired the way this episode, which, it's worth emphasizing, first aired more than 23 years ago, tackles headlong the fraught relationship between the police and the black community in Baltimore. The central storyline, roughly adapted from a real event recounted in David Simon's 1988 book, resonates with the threat of imminent violence, which still today embodies the dynamic between police and communities of color, and the writing and performances are strong enough to carry that heavy theme. For those reasons, as well as for its elegiac final montage, and most of all for Andre Brower's face-melting performance in the centerpiece interrogation scenes, I submit that Black and Blue deserves to be Homicide: Life on the Streets' second entry in the canon.
Thank you, Charles. Charles with the NPR voice that I'm very jealous of. Shall we let Kim go first? Because I suspect Kim is the one who picked this from our pool.
Yeah, before she does that, just a note, though. We've had this for a while. So when he says this should be the second homicide inducted, we have two. Jeb Lund also submitted one last year. Kim, proceed.
Okay. Yes, Jim and I agreed that this is the one that we wanted to pick. And it's funny because my first introduction to talking about television with other people over the internet was Homicide. I used to, even before Mighty Big TV, before Dawson's Wrap, I used to go on Alt TV Homicide, the Usenet group, to talk about Homicide, along with one Mr. Alan Sepinwall was a contributor to that group as well. So I have a long history with this show. I used to watch it when it was on. I was a big fan, but I have maybe the first five or so seasons on DVD. I just discovered. I did not know that I had those. Like many of you, my DVDs live in a drawer now and pretty much never get taken out. Because it's a goddamn shame that Homicide is not available on any streaming service. It's not.
Yeah, what the hell?
It's not syndicated. Even if you're like, okay, it's not streaming, but they show it on USA or whatever. It's not. It's nowhere. It has disappeared from the cultural landscape, which is a terrible crime.
I think I wrote a program parole board pitch for it to be on streaming, like, twice. Once at the beginning of Previously.tv, once they love, guys, still a problem.
Yes, I've seen yours. I've seen other. I think I saw one, like, on Vulture once. Like, you know, anyone who has watched the show pretty much is like, why can't I continue to watch it?
Yeah.
But that said, I took a long break from the show. I haven't really watched it in many years. And I will say it still feels fresh to me. Like it still felt, you know, sometimes you go back and watch a show from the early 90s and it's very dated. The clothes are dated. The language is dated, but the style of the show is dated. And this, even though it was, you know, it you could tell it was from the 90s, but it didn't. The language didn't feel dated to me. The acting didn't feel dated. It still felt fresh to me. And obviously, as Charles pointed out, the issues that it raises do not sadly feel dated either. There's still things that we're grappling with, maybe even more so, or at least they're more brought to light. So I was glad to take a look at it. I did think you could pick almost any episode from the first four or five seasons of this show, and I'd probably vote for it to be in the canon because I'm kind of in the tank for Homicide. I was glad that he didn't go into the subplots because they were terrible. Much as I loved seeing Juliana Margulies as a fetus. That was not good. But
with adult eyebrows.
Yeah.
And then some.
Yeah. But, you know, Homicide was never great with the subplots from what I recall. There were some that were more sort of lighthearted and funny than others, especially, you know, as they sort of developed the characters more and you got to know their idiosyncrasies. But, you know, Andre Brower, even though he's doing all the acting, it never bothered me. I never, you know, and obviously other people's mileage may vary, but, you know, he's really acting his heart out. But I didn't feel overwrought to me because he got the result he wanted. And it just reminded me that as much as I love Frank Pembleton as a character, those of you from the Television Without Pity days may remember that was my forum moderator nickname was Mod Pembleton. And Frank was kind of a dick. Like he was right. Much like I was talking about Sansa earlier, he was right in this episode and in most episodes. But he was super arrogant and could be a real dick.
Like also like Gorin from Criminal Intent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's sort of what makes the show interesting. Like if he was always right and also always a good guy, that's boring. Like who wants to watch that show? So I, you know, there were a lot of the issue of race in his questioning. He definitely subtly brought race into it. It wasn't like he came right out and said, look, I'm a black guy and you're a black guy. So let's talk about what black guys talk. You know, it was more subtle than that. And I don't know. I really enjoyed the episode. It was great to revisit a show that I haven't seen in a long time. Sometimes it's hard to watch this show, but overall, I enjoyed it.
All right, let's break things up. So let's go to Sarah next and then we'll go to Jim.
This was an excellent presentation. I enjoyed revisiting this episode. I too loved the show and still think that it's a crime that it's not available on streaming. Totally agree with Kim's observations that this, still felt very fresh in terms of like just the build of the show and also the confidence of the show. And this is the thing about Homicide, in the presentation, Charles, said that this is a more typical episode, and I agree. But the thing about the things that make a typical episode typical is that, you know, Homicide's greatest strengths can also be its greatest weaknesses. And I'm talking about like a certain theatrical, stagey feel that can take a little getting used to or getting reacclimated to. That was definitely present here. I don't think the show understands what Munch is and what we think of him, and like, oh, Munch's love life, like, oh god, like, really, are we doing this? And there's some like allegory about a fish that ate his girlfriend's other fish, like, you know, I get it, I just don't care. So, but like, this is a very typical Homicide episode in that way, and I think that they're built this way with some of these subplots that don't really work in order to sort of give you a rest. Like this is how they're built, so that there's this intense Brower blast, and then you get a minute off to not care about Bolander or whatever he's doing.
Brower blast.
I found this very enjoyable to watch. I can see, though, that people who were not like connecting with Homicide would not connect with this particular episode, but I thought it was great and extremely typical, and it did make me want to keep watching. Not that I can, unless I buy the DVDs, which also are like a gazillion dollars on Amazon. Like, what is it with this show? I don't get it. I'm interested to hear what other people on the panel have to say, though, because I think that it's also difficult to just pull one episode out of the line, because there's like just a general atmosphere about the show that you like or you don't like. But yeah, very good presentation. And thank you for bringing us back to this time in the 90s.
Okay, Jim.
Andre Brower is 13 years old in this episode of Homicide. Like, the first time he shows up, I wanted to get him a blankie and a bottle, because holy cow, he's a baby. As is like Kyle Secor, like, yeah, those two. Yeah. And Belzer, you know, looked like a reasonable age instead of 1,000
years
old.
And Daniel Baldwin was hot.
Yeah.
I, you know, to kind of pick up where Kim and Sarah have already talked about it, like, I think the A plot of this is great, and Andre Brower is always awesome. And especially when, you know, he's in the box, and the whole, like, his arrogance comes from that, right? Like, he's so good in those instances, and is so powerful, and, you know, everyone knows it. It's not like that's a secret or anything. It's, you know, everyone knows that when he gets somebody in the box, you know, stuff's going to happen. But then, you know, Kim and Sarah both mentioned the B plot, and I'm not sure if that kind of backs me off. Like, like, based on this presentation, which was excellent, of course, this is canon worthy, because again, Andre Brower is great. But then, boy, it gets a little harder when it's, you know, Belzer and his fish.
Yeah. yeah.
Hi. Yeah, I love that he that Charles started with the euphemism of police involved shooting, which is like, okay. I mean, it is at the beginning, they don't know what's really happened, but yeah, it does feel fresh, and it feels very contemporary, as Kim said, in a, you know, terrible, tragic way. And strangely, I would say, like, the only other cop show that I ever even watch anymore is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because I feel like, which also stars Andre Brower, and is the only show that actually acknowledges, like, the institutional problems in policing, and has evolved a lot on that issue, as I've said many times. But yeah, that was what was fascinating to me about this episode, was that we have the conversation between G and Pembleton, where he basically is like, I can get whatever you want, but that's not serving justice. And if you're, choice is between, am I a black guy or am I a cop? Like, I don't want to make that choice. I'm Pembleton. And I'm going to prove it to you in the ugliest way possible by getting this completely fraudulent confession and making you feel like a piece of shit, because that's what you deserve. Like, this is horrible. And, you know, at its base, like all institutions, like, policing exists to perpetuate its own power, and that is what this episode is about. And, you know, there obviously this one has a happy ending, but we definitely don't get the sense, especially in the scene where they're canvassing residents, that, okay, well, now the problem is solved, we got that one bad cop, everything's gonna be great for black people in Baltimore. Like, we don't have that sense that, like, this is the end of the story, or that they managed to find the one bad apple and now everything's going to be great. Like,
yeah, it should. That montage was really quite effective. And then the like cuts to the two shot of Melissa Leo just being like, well, when they're right, they're right. Like just the face that she makes. And she's like, yeah, kind of.
Yeah. There's nothing you can say. And like, that's obviously going to be, it continue to be an endemic problem that goes on. Like, these are not people who do trust the police, or people that probably should trust the police based on their experience. And like, so when, you know, when we hear Frank in the box telling Lane Staley that, you know, I wanted to become a cop and be a good cop for our community, like, he's doing the best he can, but like, there's only so much you can do when essentially your job is to preserve power. So I feel like the episode did a good job laying that out. I thought Juliana Margulies was charming. The Munch stuff was dumb. But am I ever going to vote against an episode where a bad, shitty cop goes to jail? No, I'm not. Damn.
All right. So Sarah mentioned the sort of the play quality to the presentation of this show. I always find that hard to digest at first. Like, I'm always sort of, oh, yeah, right, that's this show. Yeah. I'm always sort of taken aback by it. It takes me a little while to acclimate to it. That said, there is one actor in this episode that takes the theatricality of it to such heights that even more than Andre Brower does when he slams the table and goes, lies, lies, lies. I have to give her some sort of award. And I don't know what that is. Maybe it's just the homicide, the overacting award of the week. But she's one of the people that they canvass. And when I and me and Tara lived in New York, our upstairs neighbor who always used to bother me for tech help was like a Law and Order bit actor level actor in New York. And I always imagined this is how she would act in a TV show, because she always was like, even like little things about the computer she would talk to me about, it always seemed like way over the top. Like, I tried to get my email, but I couldn't, David. I was like, what the fuck?
She's like Jenna Maroney. She's trying to win a Tony for living dramatically.
And we've already heard this person in a clip, and I just isolated it so you can hear it again.
You have not come to find out about that boy. You have come to cover up your dirt.
I mean, everybody else in that scene is, you know, angry but speaking normally. And there's this lady. She's doing it. Anyways,
she whips out like a plastic skull and is like, furthermore. Oh, my God. Where are we?
I'm not sure what I can add that everybody else hasn't already said, except that anytime that Ned Beatty is on the screen, all I can think about, no matter what he's doing, how well he's acting, is
there we go.
Otisburg from Superman, when Lex Luthor's carving out the post California falls into the sea, and he's buying all the land along the new coast, and he's naming everything, and Ned Beatty comes up, and he's written in like child lemonade writing on this map that's on the floor, Otisburg, and he's like, Otisburg.
Anyways, that's not where I thought you were going with that.
Yeah. No, maybe
it is not Deliverance. No, it is not. It is Otisburg. It is always and forever Otisburg. Even in Deliverance, when he's getting the business, I'm thinking Otisburg. One other problem, and this just sort of an issue with just the economics of telling a story quickly on TV, and is sort of the suspect who I always find turns too quickly. Like, if this was a play, I think it would be better served by having the first half of that interrogation end at the intermission. And then you kind of like pick up to get a sense of time where you don't really get in this. I just found like that the Isaiah Washington character sort of caved too quickly. And the reason why I think it was in the forefront of my mind is Tara got me to start watching The Good Fight.
Yeah.
And then in one of the first two or three episodes, there's a storyline with the jerk dad from One Day at a Time. He's playing this guy who works at a shoe shop, and the shoe shop accuses him of stealing. And there's this whole storyline about, you know, was the interrogation fair and blah, 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 blah. And in the storyline there, he sort of like caves the same day. And he's like, oh, well, I just did it because they were like yelling at me, basically. And I'd always kind of find that I realize why that's happening. You only have like 20 minutes to tell the interrogation story or whatever. But I always find that it's like, that seems a little too quick. Like, I know Pemberton's a great interrogator, but you know, he's not that good. The one thing I don't think Charles really sold was the turn that Pemberton does when he gets the confession and folds it up and sticks it in the captain's pocket as if, you know, like, yeah, now it's your move. You're the one who has to really think about who you are. And I think that part of it was such an emotional element to the episode. I just want to re-highlight that. So,
well, that, and when they go to the board and they cross off his name and rewrite it in black, it's like, oh no, this is not right, which is why it's good when G goes back and puts it in red, although he draws the X really weird.
This is true. All right. So let us put this to the official vote. Kim Reed.
Yes.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I have come to vote. Yes.
Jim Durr.
Yes.
Tara.
Fuck the police. Yay.
And I'll say yes, too. So that means... Homicide, Life on the Street, Season 2, Episode 2, Black and Blue. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for winner and a loser of the week. Sarah has a winner.
I sure do. It is a streaming service show casting. Hulu is adapting The Dropout, the Elizabeth Holmes documentary, and has cast Kate McKinnon as the titular dropout, titular. As well, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is getting even more marvelous because Sterling K. Brown will be in season 3.
Loser?
We don't know what he's doing yet. For loser, I have Lori Loughlin. I have a little roundup from the star of Operation Varsity Blues. They finally managed to edit her out of all of her episodes of When Calls the Heart season 6. So those are going to air later than expected.
Oh, Poochie.
She has been canned. So the show has been renewed for season 7. We can all move past this. Sarah, did you know that our friend Jack Wagner also stars in that show? Because he does.
I did not realize that until seeing a tweet about these various Loughlinanigans the other day, and was like, oh my God.
And she and her husband, Massimo Target, I don't know his real last name, they have decided not to plead guilty and have entered a not guilty plea after Felicity Huffman basically took a plea. So they're going to fight it. And I have to say, I mean, more power to you. Like, if you're hearing that even if you take a plea, you'll probably do some time, take your shot. But if this Justice Department is pursuing a case against people this rich, they've probably got you dead to rights. So good luck with that. Speaking of good luck with that, do you know what time it is?
Non-regulation game time?
That's right.
I'm glad you did that, Tara, because the best I could come up with was, speaking of Loughlinanigans, do you know what time it is?
I hope some entertainment site is using that tag because it's very funny. Let me tell you about today's game time. First of all, we are between seasons. Valued guests won last season. So before we proceed to a new season, congratulations, Kim, and all your sisters
and brothers.
I had
nothing to do with it.
New season, we do a non-regulation game time just for funsies so that Dave can play. And I have written this game. Let me tell you about it. It took a break for a couple of non-regulation game times. I let it lie fallow while some new shows premiered and brought with them new songs. But now it's back. That's right. It's Tube Tunes 4. Tube Tunes 4. You all know how this goes. Dave will play a clip. He is on his non-regulation honor not to have listened to them, or they're just numbered. But we trust that he has not cheated.
Gentlemen, go evil.
Dave will play a clip. You tell me what show it's from. There's no hints, and we're not doing equalizers. We'll just go through it. We have 28 questions and a tiebreaker. Since we are 4 players today, we will put you in teams, and so it's going to be Sarah and Dave versus Kim and Jim, and the winners will get 3 steel meals. So if it's Sarah and Dave, obviously Sarah gets to take those. Kim and Jim will be playing for future valued guests. So as usual, no show is in today's game more than once, but I do have a note. While past iterations of this game, it's been 100% original songs written for TV. A couple of these are old songs with new lyrics. As I said, we have 28 clips and a tiebreaker. Let us throw it to Picky to see who goes first.
It doesn't matter who goes first. So I would say let's let the winners of the last season, Value Guests, go first.
Oh, gracious. Okay. Congratulations again to the Valued Guests. Okay, Dave, if everyone is ready, Sarah is going to keep score. Is everyone ready to play Tube Tunes number four?
Yes.
Okay. Dave, please play clip one.
This is a little song about the nuns. Fiercer, meaner, crueler, ruder than the Huns. I am forced to babysit them when I thought that I had quit them. Oh, I kind of hope that they all get the runs.
You know, she's not even a nun anymore.
Oh, I've seen the show.
Me too, but I can't place it.
And I can't
think of it. Little
hint
at the end there.
Yeah, it's a thing, and there was a guy, and he had to babysit the nuns. Oh, yep. Jim, you have any ideas?
Zero. I mean, nuns makes me think Call the Midwife.
No, it's not Call the Midwife. Oh, no. Oh, Game of Thrones. I don't know.
Orange is the New Black.
Oh, that's right.
It's from the season two finale when the nun is hunger striking.
Oh, right. Yeah. Jeez. Wow.
There's protests going on.
Yeah.
It's from so long ago, Dave still watched it then. All right. For Dave and Sarah, please play clip two.
But I never noticed the curve of her trunk.
His electric junk, we might just unfold. Electric love, electric love, electric
love. Do you know what that is, by the way, Sarah? I don't know if you watch the show beyond what we do.
She's definitely seen at least this episode.
Yeah, I know.
It is in the canon.
Yeah, I don't remember it though. So answer away.
This is the Topsy episode of Bob's Burgers.
That is correct. Ding, 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 ding.
Yay.
I'm keeping score. Am I, Tara?
No, Sarah's keeping
score. I'm doing
score.
It.
Oh, I mean, you can too.
It's 1-0, Dave. Thanks.
He's pointing it out.
All right. Clip number three is for Kim and Jim.
Sounds like Jim's keeping score too.
Is the math of love triangles is as simple as can be? I need to choose between men, but until then, the center of the triangle's little old me. Is this a triangle?
No, that's a shoe.
Is this a triangle?
No, that's you.
So I'm a triangle?
What? No.
1, 2, 3, 6, 8, 3, go!
Yeah, Jim and I are just looking at each other, making faces.
Wow.
My guess would be either 30 Rock or I had another thought while that was playing, but I've lost it. So 30 Rock?
That is not correct.
My only guess would be Smash.
It's a spoof of
Crazy
Smash.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
That was my other guess and I forgot it. Ugh.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. On to number four for Sarah and Dave.
There's a swinging town I know called Capital City.
You know the easy ones there.
People stop and scream hello in Capital City. It's the kind of place that makes a bum feel like a king. And it makes a king feel like some nutty cuckoo super king.
Hey, you guys rock. Maybe a little.
No, that's a different episode.
I know, but it's Capital City.
Yes.
Yeah. That is from The Simpsons. Final answer.
That is correct. Ding, 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 ding. No, You Guys Rock is from the New York episode.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God. I'll have to return my card. I'm sorry.
All right, Kim, I have a good feeling about number five.
Oh, no pressure.
Oh,
Thank you for including a character name in the song.
Five times.
I believe that was How I Met Your Mother.
Ding, 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 ding. That is correct. Okay, please play clip six for Dave and Sarah.
Super Key has all the powers of a key, plus all the powers of Superman. Also, he's a robot. Ain't it cool? Super King, you rule.
Oh, this one, Sarah?
No.
This is, that's from the super, that was from the, what was the cream they used? What was it? What was
the, oh, Miracle Cream.
Miracle Cream, yes. The Miracle Cream episode of Futurama.
Ding, 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 ding. Correct. Please play clip seven for Kim and Jim.
A body needs to grow, and growing takes routines. That's why meat can be a tasty treat like fish or human beings. When you eat your sweets, make sure you try to limit your servings or you'll die.
Everybody!
Oh. Jim, do you have any guesses?
I do not.
My guess is Big Mouth.
Oh, that's a good guess. But...
Kim, Sarah, or Dave?
Clone High.
Clone High.
That is Clone High.
That's Marilyn Manson singing the food pyramid.
Or you'll
I just want to say that Jim is supposed to be the animated shows person in our relationship. So any we get wrong that's an animated show, it's on him. Any non-animated, on me. So we both have made mistakes.
All right. please play clip eight for Sarah and Dave.
Four wheels together.
Well, I hope this is from a true crime show because I got nothing.
It's not, but it's a show that Sarah did watch at one time.
Okay, then that confirms my my suspicion that it is Nashville.
That is correct.
Bunty.
That's the huge sing-along that they did at the Grand Ole Opry in the series finale.
Okay.
That actually made me cry because I'm a sap. Okay, please play clip nine for Kim and Jim.
You were wrong. I found his son. I found his son. That's me.
Too early?
We rehearsed this.
We were on your scooter.
Ah!
That sounds like Scrubs.
Ding, 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 ding. That is Scrubs. Clip 10 is for Dave and Sarah.
Now, Grandma's a person who everyone likes. She brought you a train and a bright, shiny bike. But lately, she hasn't been coming to dinner. And last time you saw her, she looked so much thinner. Now, your mom and your dad said she moved to Peru. But the truth is she died, and someday you will too. La, 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 la.
Okay, so that has to be Friends.
Yes.
Correct. Ding, 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 ding.
And the last one was Scrubs, which reminds me, I forgot to make this observation to you, Tarp, when we were watching Scrubs, which is Heather Graham's character is basically Phoebe, and she talks like Phoebe in the first couple episodes as true. Well. It was really strange to watch, like, what a clone of a character that was.
Yeah.
All right, time for a score break.
All right, let's move to the score break page where we play the score break music, and that's this.
Yes, indeed. At the current time, Kim and Jim have 2 points, and Dave and I have 5 points.
Oh, yay! Yeah.
All right, you're going down, Syracuse.
Also, we're still in it. We got this. We're just lulling you into a false sense of security. Oh,
it's working.
It is working.
We live north of the wall, so we take our time, like the Night King.
All right, please play clip 11 for Kim and Jim.
The Irma Lerman Merman murder. Turn the bird's word lurid. The whir and the purr of a twirler girl. She would the world were demure. The insurer's a law for valor. Whop your carriwara. One fervent whirl over her turgid error. Rural Jura. Rural Jura.
I just looked at Jim when it started and tried to mouth rural juror, which is not the easiest.
Nope, can't mouth
this
that.
This is 30 Rock.
Ding, ding, ding. That
a
is
show
correct.
Jim and I used to watch when our children were newborns, and we had to wake up and feed them at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. every night. we'd always watch one episode of 30 Rock was one feeding. So my memories of that show are foggy at best, but I did remember that.
How many takes do you think it took to do the nonsensical?
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's
so hard to do. Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Clip 12 is for Dave and Sarah.
Come on to the tide. I can feel you inside. I'm under your spell, surging like the sea, holding you so helplessly. I break with every swell, lost in ecstasy, spread beneath my willow tree. Make me complete.
I went with the really filthy verse.
Thank you for show. Cutting it there.
Yeah, and also, yeah,
the show did too. That was the joke. They cut it off in the middle of one of those completes. Anyway.
That's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct. Clip 13 is for Kim and Jim.
There's a town I know where the hipsters go called Bedrock. Twitch, twitch. When you get an itch, then you do the twitch in Bedrock. Twitch, twitch, cause the twitching's fine. Have yourself a time in Bedrock. Twitch, twitch.
He's excited.
He's marvelous.
Nah, just before you answer, this is a trick question.
I mean, it might be.
I mean, it could be, but if it's a trick question, I have no guess. So I'll go with the obvious answer, which is the Flintstones.
Ding, 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 ding. That is correct.
Nice try, Dave.
Yeah.
Hipsters. Oh, my God.
Clip 14 is for Sarah and Dave.
Big Yellow John, Big Yellow John. I'll meet you down at the Big Yellow John. Big Yellow John, Big Yellow John.
Sarah, do you got this one?
No, I feel like I should know it, but I don't.
That's the Big Yellow Joint, I believe, is the name of the song they're singing there from Arrested Development.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. Clip 15 is for Kim and Jim.
Love doesn't last forever. It will die and break your heart. And you can't have a sexual awakening without tearing lives apart.
Take your mom for granted and you'll lose her in due time. The only way to dull last pain is get sewn out of your mind.
Woo! Life is a fucked up mess. Life is a fucked up mess. Life is a fucked up mess. Oh, it's a shit show.
Basically, any song that's about sex and sexual awakening, I'm just going to keep guessing this. Big Mouth?
Correct!
Yay!
My favorite story about Big Mouth is after the first season dropped, I teach college, and one of my students who was probably like 18 or 19 was watching it on his phone like before class started. And I walked by and I was like, oh, Big Mouth, that's a good show. And he was horrified that an old lady like me, also his teacher, was talking to him about Big Mouth. And afterwards, I kind of went, yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that.
That's amazing. All right, clip 16 is for Sarah and Dave.
You can feel anything at all, anything at all. You can feel it. Happy, sad, very small, anything at all, it's fine.
I know what show it is, but I can't remember what the fucking show is called. All right.
Talk it out.
Okay, it's the Jim Carrey show on Showtime. Oh. It's one word.
Fuck.
It's,
It was a weird topic on this podcast.
Yeah. It's, yes. You know, he plays Mr. Rogers' S character.
Oh, my God. Yes, I can picture the fucking...
And it's all, like, stupid
of the
openings.
Card.
It starts I'm with a K, I want to say, maybe?
Kidding?
It's probably called Kidding.
Yes! Ding, yeah. Ding, ding, ding!
Oh, damn it!
She did it!
Wow.
Amazing.
We did it together.
Good talking it out, guys.
Okay, clip 17 is for Kim.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
Generic 80s new wave. Beep, bop, beep, bop, beep, bop. This is a song from the 80s. The decade which it currently is.
It's a song from the 80s. The decade which it currently is. Jim, any thoughts?
No clue.
A show set in the 80s? maybe. That 70s show.
Wait, if I tell you to listen for one voice, and I just played a little bit of that clip again.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Sure.
The American 80s new wave, beep, bop, beep, bop, beep, bop. This is a song from the 80s. The decade which it currently is.
I only say that because whenever this voice comes up in anything, I immediately know who it is, except for one show, which I thought he was on, which he wasn't, which has already been on this very quiz.
Yeah. I'll make a different guess that's going to be equally wrong, which is Saturday Night Live.
So that was Will Arnett, who does voices. Like him and Chris Parnell are like spending 23 hours a day recording ads. That was BoJack Horseman, right?
Yes, correct.
Jim.
Yeah, Jim.
Yeah, Jim's really letting you down.
I would really guess News Radio, so I thought it was Hartman. I always do that.
I can see that guess. Okay, clip 18 is for Sarah and Dave.
Let's be bad.
What a mess. She's so doped up, I can't use any of it.
Say bye-bye for party. No polite society.
Give me notoriety.
Let's be bad.
You're fabulous, Marilyn.
The whole world adores you. Keep dancing. You're gorgeous.
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 I mean, this is not my answer. I'm conferring with Sarah, but I think this might be Smash.
I think this has to be Smash. And if it's not, I got nothing. Ding, ding. So Smash. Yay.
It is Smash.
All right.
Ding, ding. Okay, clip 19 is for Kim and Jim.
Bob, did you know that in the early 1800s, it was legal for white people to enslave African Americans?
Hmm.
But then Abraham Lincoln, a white man, set them free.
Yeah. And David and I believe that it's never too late for us to say to our African American brothers and sisters,
you're welcome.
Hey, you're welcome. Hey, don't mention it. Use that freedom in any way you like, because you're not slaves. No more, don't have to behave. No more, but we sure hope you do. You're welcome to Yooby Dooby 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 Doo.
Thank you for the huge clue at the beginning. That's Mr. Show.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct. Let's do clip 20 for Sarah and Dave.
This next song is about Senator Joe McCarthy.
Goes a little something like this.
Root him out, Joe, ho! Send them all back to icy Moscow, ho! Root him out, Joe, ho! Let them all dance to the Call Me a Go-Go.
Well, judging by those voices, I would say it's Kids in the Hall. I'm just doing a mental Rolodex if anything like of that ilk ever happened with Kevin, what's his face on News Radio. I can't place it. So, Sarah, unless you absolutely know that it's from something else, I would say probably Kids in the Hall.
I am comfortable with that guess. All proceed.
Right. Ding, 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 ding.
All right. Phew.
It's from the episode with career-ending moments in show business that also has the actress thanking Hitler in her Oscar acceptance speech. All right, let's have another score break.
Let's do.
Kim and Jim have 6 points, and Dave and I have 10 points.
Hey, exciting game. I think you can still tie it up. Anyway.
Yeah, if they cut their mics and we're good.
Shit the bed and you sweep.
Yeah.
All right.
Shit in the bed is my specialty.
With that in mind, let's go on to clip 21 for Kim and Jim.
Rosa, 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 Diaz, 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 Rosa, Diaz, Rosa, Diaz, Diaz, Rosa, Rosa, Diaz, Diaz, you are so cool.
Sounds better with a guitar.
I would just like to say I mouthed the answer to Jim and he actually was like, huh?
He's like, real jerk.
He watches the show, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Ding, 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 ding.
I love it.
Nice. Clip 22 is for Sarah and Dave.
Get that hairspray flowing, heavy on the mousse. Bustier on that, my friend, a sequin tight caboose. Eyeliner, lip gloss, glitter in the hair. When we get out on the dance floor, all of Hollywood will stare. Makeover.
I know it. Sarah, do you know it?
I don't. I know it's not Clone High.
No, it threw me at first because I was like, music, what? But that's from Glow, right?
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I've seen that episode. Yeah. Nice.
All right. Clip 23 is for Kim and Jim.
My brother's brave. My brother's wise. My brother doesn't like girls. He likes guys. He kisses men. That turns him on. And if you think that's gross, well, then I think you're wrong. 'Cause I think it's cool. My brother's gay, and that's okay. The haters may hate, but I love how he's gay. He is so gay in every way. My brother Gary is gay, and that's okay.
You could see the faces Jim and I are making at one another during that song. We have no idea, so I'm going to have to come up with a guess, which is It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, that's a good guess.
It is.
That is not correct. Dave or Sarah?
Is it the other two?
Yeah.
It is the other two.
Oh, we don't get Comedy Central that's on, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I haven't watched it yet.
It's very good. Clip 24 is for Sarah and Dave.
Yeah, yo, I'm about to set it, yo. Turn on my headphones. Come on, check my style out. Rap song. We do our raps and then the crowd goes wild. And then it's time for the after party. And we hang out and do lots of sex with girls, yo.
I don't know it, but it sounds funny.
I'm gonna guess that's Saturday Night Live.
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, phew. Yeah. I recognize Andy Samberg's voice, but
yep.
Yeah.
As Blizzard Man.
Yeah.
All right. Clip 25 is for Jim and Kim.
All I want to do is come running home to you. Come running home to you. And all my life I promise to keep running.
It might not seem like it because that sounds very generic, but there is a bit of a hint in that.
Jim, why don't you come up with a guess? Because I have no idea.
Outlander. Sorry, wait.
It's not Outlander. That is The Flash.
The
musical episode.
Right,
running
because
home.
He's talking to somebody, and it's you. So you should have known the answer. Is that what you mean?
Okay, let's do number 26 for Dave and Sarah.
I'm a Lamborghini. I'm a Hollywood star. I'm a little bit tipsy when I drive my car. I'm expensive sushi. I'm a cute, huge yacht. I'm a little bit single, even when I'm not. I'm a little bit... I'm a little bit of la 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 la, a little bit of Lexus, la 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 la.
Okay, so I'm just, not my guess. I'm talking to Sarah and all our dear listeners, but I would I have no idea. But just from Alexis, I would say Dynasty, the new one.
Sure, because I don't know either. So let's guess that
Dynasty.
Ah, goddamn!
Schitt's Creek.
What is it?
Schitt's Creek.
Oh, okay. Never would have got that in a million years.
Well, nope. This clip was going around the internet. I thought it might have come across someone's Twitter feed. That's how I saw it.
Dang.
Let's do a score break, please.
Score break. Here we go.
In our final score break, Kim and Jim have 7, and Dave and I have 12. Dun, dun, dun.
Very good. Well... Let's close it up with number 27 for Kim and Jim.
Number 27.
Something don't taste right, 'cause it ain't right. Like when you take a sip of water and it turns out to be Sprite. I know your secret, and now I regret ever having you out your closet. Is this what I deserve? I took you at your word. You know I'm not too feminine to cut me up a nerd. What's worse, being heartbroken or roach bit? Heartbroken or roach bit?
Heartbroken or roach bit?
That is Kimmy Schmidt.
The ding, 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 ding.
Beyonce Lemonade parody.
That is correct. Clip 28 is for Dave and Sarah.
Doing the pigeon. Doing the pigeon. People may smile, but I don't mind. They'll never understand the kind of fun I find. Doing the pigeon. I love it.
Oh, Bert.
I was going to ask.
Sesame Street, I believe.
Sesame Street or the Muppet Show. And okay. I agree with Sarah. Sesame Street is the answer, yes?
Ding, 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 ding. Sesame Street is correct. All right, let's get the final scores.
Final score.
Yes. Thanks in no small part to Dave's help. Sarah and Dave have 13, and Kim and Jim have 8.
Excellent work all around. I don't know what else to offer for the shits and giggles tiebreaker, but shall we just play it for fun? I don't know. Dave, you're usually the game master. What would you do if we're already playing for steel meals?
Single steel meal?
Sure.
They're beautiful.
News video. Video.
There's Harbin. I heard you both simultaneously, which means Kim was first.
What's the matter? Sarah! Dave!
Ooh!
That was nice.
Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We sat still in our chairs, silently staring at the Game of Thrones final season premiere before going around the dial where Tara couldn't really bless this mess. Kim conjured up her feelings on the magicians. Sarah investigated the new series of Bosch, and Jim put us all in jeopardy. Charles did good police work picking homicide life on the streets black and blue. For the canon, we crowned winners and losers of the week, and Team Sarah Dave was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
let's be bad.
Sarah D. Bunting,
lurking somewhere.
Kim Reed,
Valor Margulis,
and Jim Durr.
Even some earmuffs or like a balaclava would be okay.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
May I ask, how are we meant to feed the greatest army the world has ever seen? While I ensured our stores would last through winter, I didn't account for Dothraki unsullied and 2 full-grown dragons. What do dragons eat, anyway?
Whatever they want.